Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. Our chance each week to get together and have a look at what's going on in the technology world from a blind and partially sighted perspective. It's very much your programme, so if you want to get in contact with us, our email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. More than welcome to drop us an email, a written email, or attach a voice message. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing how theatre stage design is being made more accessible with the help of NaviLens codes. Samuel Green from Zoom will be joining us to talk all about the Zoom PodTrack P4 Next recorder. And we'll be having a look at the Orion app, which aims to help you locate objects and navigate your environment a bit easier. Hubert Pavalkovic and Jackie Brown are with me this week. Let's see what's catching our eye. Hubert, what have you got?
So it's one of these things where you use an app and you don't really get much in descriptions of updates. And all of a sudden, you're exploring an app interface and suddenly you see something that wasn't there before. I had this with the Gemini app where I was browsing yesterday, working on a little project, and said, notebooks. And I thought, hey, what's this? This wasn't here 5 minutes ago. Turns out a Gemini, Google Gemini app, at least on iOS, has a new feature called Notebooks, where you can add files, images, links, and you can also add various chats to do with a specific project, for example. The whole point of this feature is to prevent Gemini from having a memory of a goldfish by remembering the files and chats you've put into said project for it to use as resources. So I found it quite interesting. I'm still fully kind of playing with it and see how it actually works and how well it does. But yeah, I'm finding this quite interesting because if it means that you can group certain things relating to a specific topic or project you're working on, and Gemini will use that to use it as information, I think it'd be quite interesting and easier to manage things where you don't want Gemini to forget what you've mentioned before or kind of mistake it. I doubt it'll be perfect, but it's a nice little feature on paper, at least for now anyway, based on my experimentation of it.
So, Hubert, how does this work with the Gemini that's built into Google? Because obviously it works slightly differently, doesn't it? On iOS, you have an app and you have to go into it. So how does, is that, do you know if that's built into to Android, you know, when you press the side button and ask it to do something for you? I'm just, because I haven't seen that on my Android device, so I'm just curious, really.
Having not been an Android user, I'm not quite sure. And I know, for example, the iPad version of the Gemini app doesn't have that yet. So on the iPad, because I was trying to access my notebook on the iPad that I've created, and it wasn't showing up, even though supposedly I've had the latest update to the Gemini app installed, but yet it's showed on the phone, it's not showing on the iPad. So I think it's something that's still slowly being rolled out, I imagine. So as to where it will be available exactly platform-wise, I'm not really sure. I've noticed it on my iPhone app, but then again, my other Apple device, my iPad, doesn't have it. So consistency of availability, I'm not sure.
Why don't they put this stuff in the release notes? It always annoys me. I mean, maybe it's just us kind of people who look at the release notes, but pretty much every time you check the App Store for updates, it's just bug fixes or we've made improvements to make your experience even better with just every single version. Well, what improvements have you made?
Exactly. It frustrates me because I actually want to know what's new. And a lot of these apps have often done, even WhatsApp's now changed its update descriptions to keep your app up to date to get the latest features and improvements. And that's great. But what a lot of us want to know is what the improvements are there. And sometimes, you know, we all look at the we all look for the dreaded design interface changes or interface redesign, where you kind of go, ooh, do I want to install that based on the description, or do I maybe want to hold off and see what people's opinions are? So update descriptions for blind and partially sighted people are actually quite important in terms of whether they want to update an application or wait to see what changes have been made.
But with this Gemini feature, though, have either of you tried out, and I haven't, I've heard a lot about it, but have either of you tried out this Notebook LM from Google? Because I'm wondering if this is just basically bringing this into Gemini in some ways.
I've heard of it, but I haven't tried it.
It works with Notebook LM, basically. So the notebooks you create in the Gemini app, you can access in Notebook LM as well.
Okay. That sounds pretty... sounds pretty cool. Jackie, you seem pretty excited about this one.
Well, I really like Gemini. So, you know, I'm always interested in what else it's going to bring to the table. And I'm also aware that the Gemini app on iOS is slightly different to the way that Gemini works. Not so much its features, because it's the same across the board, but I find it quite interesting to compare what Gemini in the iOS app does compared to the Gemini that you get that's built into Google devices. And I just really like Gemini, and I'm looking forward to seeing this available on the XR glasses that Google are purported to be bringing out at some point this year, maybe early next year.
Yeah.
Because to have Gemini as a wearable, for me, it's I'm really quite excited about that.
Well, I'll tell you something else that is quite cool, and I promise you this wasn't intentional. We've got a bit of a Google theme on this Tech Radar this week. But a few months ago, I think, I mentioned on the show how I got a prompt from Google, because I've got the Google doorbell and a couple of Google cameras around my house. And I went into the Google Home app and I got a prompt saying, like, you can now use Gemini within your Google Home and get descriptions of what's happened on your cameras and summaries and create automations and stuff. So I went onto it, and it turned out it was teasing me, because I went to, like, get started and it said, sorry, this is not currently available in your country. I was so annoyed at the time. I thought, well, don't bring it up then. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really annoying. I like that. It's like, it takes with one, gives with one hand, yeah, takes away with the other.
But that was a while ago, but it's finally become available. So I upgraded, and as it happens, my Google subscription, my home subscription was due for renewal. So I upgraded it to the Premium Plus, which was twice the price. But it did give me these AI features. And it's really, really cool. It does. So before, when someone pressed the doorbell, it would either say someone's at the door, or it did have, it does have facial recognition built in. So if we programmed in people's faces, it would say, like, Jess is at the door, or Dad is at the door, or something like that. It would recognize people. But what it does now, it does similar thing, but in a lot more detail. So it might say, like the other day I got a delivery. We got a delivery from Evri, which is a like courier service in the UK. And they rang the doorbell and a notification came up on my phone. My speakers just said the generic someone's at the door. But on my phone, I got a notification of an Evri delivery person is at your door with a package.
Oh my word, wow. That is amazing. Because often you kind of don't want to answer the door in case it's a salesperson or it's someone else. So if it can tell you, like, if that is, it is a delivery driver, you know that, okay, it would be good to open the door because it's a delivery rather than anything else. So that's really good.
And it does it for just general motion events as well. Like if I go onto the app, if I was to flick through the activities, because the way that doorbell works is that you can have motion detection. So, for example, we've got motion detection on one of the cameras that runs just past the driveway, because the whole idea of it is that it overlooks the car. So it runs sort of just off our property, not far, but just to the very edge of the driveway. But then if someone gets closer, so it will record that, but if someone gets closer to the door, then it will notify us. So quite often you'll get, like, a person walking a dog walks past or something like that. Just much more description. It doesn't always get it right. So this was hilarious. A lot of people say that Jess and James, which is my wife and son, look pretty much the same. Like, it's like looking in a mirror, looking at them two. And Jess walks in the other day carrying James, and it got them mixed up. So we've now got an event that says James walks interview carrying Jess.
Wow.
I was like, okay, yeah, still early days. But it is brilliant, and you can ask more about it. So you can say, I don't know, say it said, like with the, when the postman comes, it will usually say a person walks up the driveway carrying mail. But then you could ask more detail. You could say, like, I don't know, what, tell me more about what the person looked like, or were they wearing a particular uniform and stuff. And the answers aren't great that you get from it. It kind of just refers to what it's already said. But sometimes it can help. Sometimes it can give you that little bit more detail. So still early days, definitely not perfect, but I'm impressed so far.
Well, it's a step in the right direction because, you know, you still get more than you did. Okay, it's not perfect, but it's more than you had before. And to me, sometimes even the basic description means I can decide whether I want to pay more attention to it or not, especially with the motion detection. Sometimes my ring bell goes off with a motion detection. Oh, what is this now? But the problem is I have no idea, because if you listen to the little video clip it records during that motion detection, you just hear noise. And There's no way to actually get it described, because I've tried exporting it to a third-party app. Won't do it. So to have that ability in the app, I think, is really is a game changer.
I think it is as well. And also, I remember a long time ago, because we've got the Google doorbell as well, but we did start with the subscription, but we haven't renewed it. So I'm going to seriously think about that. But one time, I opened the door because I was expecting a taxi, and it actually turned out that I could hear the rumbling of the engine. I thought, all right, that's my taxi. I went outside and the guy goes, I've got a parcel for you. I went, all right, thanks very much.
I've done that.
I'd forgotten the parcel was coming and I thought it was a taxi. So, you know, it does save those kind of embarrassing moments when you're expecting somebody else. And you know, it's good. I love the idea, Hubert.
Yeah, because that's what I used to do as well, export it to a third-party app if I really needed to know what it was for whatever reason. But, I mean, try doing that. You know, if there's a time where you ever need to do that quickly, then, I mean, good luck. You've got to sort of go into the event. Then there's a couple of, like, share buttons that you've got to press. And then one of those will be something like save to files or save to photos or something. Then you've got to go into your photos app and then export it out into something like PickyBot or something, and then wait for that to process. So you're not getting that done quickly by any stretch. And you might still have to do that to get more info, but if you can just get something, which, like you said, Hubert, just gives you the idea of whether you want to look more into it or not.
Well, it's anything more than what you get already is a bonus, in my opinion. I think it's the small wins for me. You know, it's progress, and I think progress is more important than perfection sometimes. And I think this is exactly why I like this, because it's not a perfect solution, but it's a step closer to giving you more information than you had before.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Well, a lot to get into this week, as usual. Let's get into it. This is Tech Talk.
Recently, I had the chance to speak with Samuel Green, who is the Director of Product Development and Customer Support at Zoom North America. To begin, I asked how the idea of implementing voice guidance on the latest devices from Zoom came about.
You know, it's something we've heard for a long time, and there was definitely some lobbying that's occurred over the years. And there was always a sense of, you know, there's this hurdle that we would have to get over for that. But if we did get over that hurdle, if we did implement it for the first time, it would be much easier to implement it additional times. And it took a little while for us to start the effort on the first recorders, which were the H1, H4, and H6 Essential, which have been out for a couple of years now. And once we did that, it just made sense to keep it going and putting in more recorders. And so since then, we have had it installed in the H2 Essential, in the H5 and the H6 Studios. And then most exciting to me, now finally in one of the podcast recorders, the PodTrack P4 Next. So, you know, it started from suggestion from people sharing with us what that would mean to the community. And then the engineering team saying, okay, it's time to do it. And it took really a lot of development in those first couple of recorders. But the great thing about that is now it's been much easier for us to keep it going in other recorders.
Yeah, I mean, they are very high-end recorders, and I know that a lot of people in the blindness community, they do like a good recorder. They're very conscious of sound, and we do like, you know, really good portable recorders and stuff that you can take out in the field, as it were. So they were met with huge excitement when the H Essential series came out. I've got the one and the four, but as you say, you've added to those, and recently the PodTrack P4 Next, which I also now have, and I must admit I'm absolutely thrilled with this recorder, because I wanted something that was going to be small, that I could take it away with me when I wanted to go somewhere and do some recording, and I wanted something that would tell me when I had muted or unmuted one of the microphones. I wanted to be able to record on my phone as well, to plug a cable in and record on my iPhone. And we use screen readers, of course. So it's really good if you're doing a demonstration to be able to use your voiceover screen reader on your iPhone or your JAWS screen reader on your computer and actually record that rather than just having it next to a microphone and picking it up that way. So I was really thrilled when the PodTrack came out, because I thought this is just what I need, and it is so tactile as well for somebody with no sight. So I just found it excellent. So do you have plans to continue with that, with putting more voice guidance in to any future recorders? Have you got anything else in the pipeline?
So just to start, you know, did listening to what you said, that, and I love so much, you know, the response from the blind community has been so incredible since the beginning, and as we've released subsequent recorders. And it was, even, you know, after those first couple of recorders that had it, it was almost immediate of when is it going to be in the podcasting recorder? It could be, you know, for people that don't know, your podcast recorders have some special features, like being able to plug in a phone to do a remote phone call, plenty of headphone outputs, the sound pads, and just this audio processing available on them that's really specialized for that kind of podcast sound. And so it was a very exciting leap to go out of just the recorders for everybody to this specific for podcasting.
Yeah.
I'm not able to speak on any specific recorders in the future, but, you know, this has been a approaching 4-year, you know, journey, and every single year has featured new recorders that have this accessibility feature in it. So although I can't speak specifically, I anticipate we'll see more.
For me, two really important aspects of what you're doing with these recorders is, first of all, the fact that you offer descriptions of the recorders in doc file that you can download from your website. And actually, so when you get a recorder out of the box, you actually have it placed in front of you, and you've got this document that tells you exactly where everything is on it. And I just think that is so commendable, because, you know, so often we buy technology and it isn't accessible in any way, and you've just got to start from scratch, really guessing where the knobs and the buttons are, whereas you have made that job so much easier. And the other aspect that I think is commendable from your perspective, from Zoom, is that you have the thing talking out of the box. And so often you buy a piece of technology and you've actually got to turn on the voice guidance or screen reader, whatever it is, you have to turn that on. And that means that you need sighted assistance if you don't have any sight to do that. So the fact that you can actually open a box on a Zoom recorder that has voice guide, you turn it on and you have the voice speaking right out of that box, asking if you actually want it to stay on or turn it off. And I just think that I wish everybody else was listening to that and listening to the way that you've done that, because it really is. It makes such a huge difference when you can actually open a box and instead of having to wait for somebody to come round or try to, you know, get help with it in some way to turn it on. Where do you start? You're in the reverse, and you know, we can get going straight away. So they're the two things for me that really stick out for Zoom in your favor, in that what you've achieved over, really, it sounds like a long time, but it isn't. It has been a fairly short space of time since you issued the first recorder with voice guide. We've seen several more, and it's just very welcome in the community.
Absolutely. And having the first thing that happens when you buy the product and turn it on be, here's the guide voice. Would you like to keep this on or would you like to turn it off? That was something from the beginning that, you know, we thought, if this is truly going to be accessible, then it has to be accessible out of the box and have that be something you turn off. And so I am very happy with that part of it. You know, going back to the documents you mentioned, that's a case where communication and collaboration with the blind community is what resulted in those. That was not something that we did originally. And frankly, our manuals are not the most accessible manuals, and they have some images and stuff. And so in our conversations after the first releases, you know, it was brought up that there could be, you know, this layout description to help guide people through as they're getting started. And so that was the result of us communicating with people in the community. And so we're very appreciative of that. We've, you know, gotten so much feedback, and you know, not that every single thing has been able to be implemented, but those documents that we create for each of the recorders that has the system, that is from the blind community helping us out. And so we thank you guys for that.
Well, it really is. I mean, they're great little documents as well, you know, that they're excellent to be able to refer back to. You forget, you know, well, what does that button do again? Especially when you're first starting to use them. It is so useful to have that, and I'm really glad that people were able to feed that back to you. One of the major, I think, questions for me isn't an issue, but for some people, they've wondered how they could make the, or how Zoom could make the file list accessible. Would you ever consider going a little bit further and having some kind of TTS, text-to-speech engine, in the recorders, or is that going to be really problematic and maybe use a lot of processing power that the recorders just don't have, and the work that would have to go into that? Because at the moment, all the command prompts and everything, they're voice tagged, whereas a TTS actual engine would have to, you know, be able to know what the file names are called. So I just wondered if you had thought any more about doing something like that.
Absolutely. And your understanding, your description right there is spot on, kind of to the current situation. There is some technical limitations that we run into with really expanding in that direction of having a full text-to-speech ability. We've considered some alternatives to specifically the file list, and nothing that we've been able to implement so far. But I will acknowledge that, you know, it is probably the top of the list of comments that we have that if we can update, we absolutely will. So something we looked at, we are looking at, and we'll continue to look at for the future. But unfortunately, right now, I can't say if and when it would happen.
My way around this is, what I do is I connect my recorder to my PC once I've made a recording. And then I go into the recorder and I remove the files from my SD card. And I put them somewhere safely on my computer in another folder. And I rename the files so that they make sense to me what they're called. And that way my SD card in the unit is then free to continue recording again the next time I want to interview or do, you know, make a recording. I have the files then afresh. So I don't end up with lots and lots of files with just date order and think, when did I do that? Or what's that one called? Or I need to play that to find out what it is. So that's my way around it. And I think that's the way around it that a lot of blind people in the community use. The way that they implement it is just to remove the files off the card, and then the card's free to start off again the next time. And that is a good workaround. Personally, that's the way I look at it. But it would, of course, be fantastic if at some point further down the line in the future, you were able to, you know, have some way of identifying file names. But it's not a massive deal breaker. For me, the deal breaker is the fact that, you know, these recorders are just now so accessible. That is the real big deal for me. It's brilliant.
Absolutely. And the workaround you described there is something I hear from other people as well. And so, yes, you know, that's a great way to do it, is to make sure that the list of files stays manageable, which, you know, if you don't empty the card for a while, can get unmanageable very quickly. So yes, just transferring to the computer and then organizing files from there, probably the best workaround available right now.
Yeah, I think so. And it does then free up your SD card anyway. It depends how much storage you have on the card to spare. But that is my workaround, and I would recommend anybody else do that. Samuel, I just want to thank you on behalf of everybody in the blindness community, wherever they are and wherever they listen to programs like this, for coming on and making these devices so accessible. They are really high-end recorders, and you know, we are very appreciative of the work that you have done at Zoom to not only make them accessible, but to, you know, to give us the opportunity to open the box and start using them straight away with the documentation, and you know, the fact that VoiceGuide is on by default. I just can't tell you how grateful we are for that, and we'd like to see, you know, more companies adopting that kind of method. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. You know, for about 15 years, maybe a little less than that, but approaching that, our kind of catchphrase has been, we're for creators. And putting this accessibility system, I think, is one of the purest, you know, ways that we can live by that, is to enable more creators access to the equipment needed to create. And that's what we love to see. Is people finding their passion and having the correct tools to be able to do it. So we thank everybody in the community for the feedback and the acceptance of these recorders. And I absolutely look forward to enabling creation for a long time to come.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Making technology accessible. Tech Talk.
We join our Toby Davey now as he finds out all about how an exhibition showcasing the emerging talents of new theatre designers is being made accessible to blind and partially sighted people through the use of Navi Lens codes.
You join me here on RNIB Connect Radio at the National Theatre in London, and I'm in the Littleton Lounge, which is part of the foyer to the Littleton Theatre here at the National Theatre. And around me, I'm surrounded by exhibits which are part of the 2025 Limbury Prize exhibition. And I'm here with Jock Maitland, who is the Design Skills Coordinator of the Learning Department here at the National Theatre, who's going to tell me a little bit more about the Limbury Prize, but also about why the National Theatre wanted to make the exhibition accessible to blind and partially sighted people through the use of the Navi lens codes, not only to navigate around the exhibition, but also to hear descriptions of the work that's on display. Jock, it's great to have you with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's good to chat with you. Thank you for coming.
So, Jock, just tell me a little bit about the history of the Limbury Prize, because I think next year it celebrates its 40th anniversary.
Yes, that's correct. The Limbury Prize was founded in 1987 by Lady Anya Sainsbury. Before her marriage, she was the ballerina Anya Linden, and Limbury is actually a portmanteau of Linden and Sainsbury. And so she, after her career as a ballet dancer, she was particularly interested in theatre design, and she went on to become a mother and have children and raise a family. And she wanted to invest back into the arts, and a particular focus became a focus on design, and she founded the Limbury Prize in 1987. And the Limbury Prize's focus is supporting emerging designers to give them the best possible start to a career in theatre design.
And it's great, I suppose, for those young designers or designers who are just coming out of university after doing their degrees to be able to have this platform to showcase their work. And also, I believe there's a sort of mentorship kind of part of the prize as well.
Yes, exactly. It's a very tough profession. We certainly don't want to fool anyone about that. And so what we're trying to do is, as I say, give them the best possible start. So they take part in this exhibition at the National. It's going to be on for 6 months. It will finish on the 6th of June. So do check it out whilst you can. But alongside that, we also arrange an associate design placement for them with an established designer, where they'll help out an established designer on a production they've got going. And as you say, it's very much a focus on mentoring, both professionally and personally, and how the everyday of working as a designer.
And the great thing for me as somebody who's visually impaired is the fact that you're using the Navi lens codes, which are dotted around the exhibition, which will not only give you a bit of background about each designer, but also a description of their work, their set design, their costumes, drawings, their costumes that are there as well. Why did the National want to use Navi lens codes to make the exhibition accessible?
Yes, good question. So fundamentally, a core aim of the Skills Centre is accessibility. We're trying to make the theatre industry more reflective of society at large. And obviously, a certain section of society is blind and visually impaired. So it makes a huge amount of sense that we create our work which is accessible to people who are visually impaired or blind. So it's essentially as simple as that.
And the great thing about the National Theatre is that the National Theatre has been doing audio-described performances for many years now, and I think every production there's an audio-described performance. So access is pretty much, I suppose, the heart of the National.
Very much so. I think you can't really say National Theatre without thinking about what National means, and National means everyone within the country. And it's kind of an impossible task to create a type of theatre for everyone, but that's what we have to strive to, and that's what we are trying our best to do.
Well, I'm going to have a little look around the exhibition in a moment using the Navi lens codes to explore the exhibition and find out a little bit about the designers' work and their background and everything else. Is there a designer from the Limbury Prize exhibition that sort of stands out for you, or whose work you're sort of really impressed with?
It's very tricky to choose just one, but a particular favourite one, I think, which does stand out because of the real creativity, is Kathy Udondo's work, who has a background in costume but explores set through costumes. So she has these wearable costumes which sort of go into other territories and other places and just create a really exciting world.
Okay, well, I'm now in the exhibition space and I'm just having a little look around, see if I can find any of these Navi lens codes to give me a bit of information about the designers who are exhibiting in the Limbury Prize exhibition. So I've got the Navi lens app up on my phone.
Selected, scan, tab, 1 of 3.
And so scan, so here we go, let's see if I can find one.
6 feet away, K Cathy Udeondo is a costume designer and maker from the Basque Country. She moved to London to complete an MA in costume design for performance, after working primarily in wardrobe departments for film, now focusing on live performance. Her practice explores the intersection between costume and set, focusing on the dialogue between people and their surroundings. Design choices are heavily influenced by my Basque heritage and the functional aesthetic at its core.
And that's fantastic, because not only have I got information about the designer, but I've obviously got information and description about their design. The sort of the way that's all sort of integrated with each other really gives us such a fantastic overview of their work and everything else, which is brilliant, because it's so much better using the Navi lens codes than trying to find a QR code, trying to get my phone near the QR code, then trying to press the QR code and get that working. So I think having the Navi lens codes here at the National Theatre for the Limbury Prize exhibition is just a fantastic example of accessibility and brilliant. And the great thing also about the descriptions as well, on the actual Navi lens app, you can listen to an audio version rather than listening to your iPhone's voice. So that can play as well, which is really good as well.
Cathy Udeondo. Cathy Udeondo is a costume designer and maker from the Basque Country. She moved to London to complete an MA in costume design for performance, after working primarily in wardrobe departments for film. Now focusing on live performance, her practice explores...
And if people wanted to find out a little bit more about the Limbury Prize, but also the schools department here at the National Theatre, where would be the best place for them to go and find out more?
So the best place is to go to the National Theatre's website, and there's a specific page dedicated to the Skills Centre where you can find out all about our work there. Specifically for the Limbury Prize, you can check out thelimburyprize.com.
Well, Jock, thank you very much indeed for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been great to meet you. Thanks, Toby.
Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
We've mentioned a couple of times on the show now about how more apps and services are slowly but surely starting to come to the Meta glasses. And this is thanks to the Wearable Access Toolkit that Meta have released, which is a bit of a techie name, but basically it means that third-party developers are able to use the camera and microphone on the glasses, where before this has been locked down to Meta's own apps, really. With the exception of Be My Eyes. But recently, we're starting to see more apps become available. We know that Aira have got a deeper integration with the glasses coming up, if it's not already available. Be My Eyes have had tighter integrations, so you can now use the groups feature, and you can now connect with companies from the service directory. And another app that is also available is Orion, which is an app that is kind of designed for locating objects. That was its original kind of selling point, where you could select an object that you're looking for, and there's a huge list of objects in there, which I'll show you in a minute. But you could select an object, or you could train it on your own objects as well. So say, for example, you've got a specific backpack that you use. Rather than it just looking for a generic backpack, it can, you can train it on yours specifically, and it will know to keep an eye out for that one. It will know the particular pattern and colour and features and all that kind of thing. That was its main selling point. It does do other features as well, which we will, again, we will go through. But this app is now available on the glasses. Scribe Me, which we've covered as well, is also available on the glasses, but that's in beta form at the minute. It is definitely usable, but you've got to download the app from, you've got to get onto the test flight beta, and you've got to jump through a couple of hoops in the Meta AI app as well to get it to work. But Orion is publicly available, so you just download the Orion app from the App Store. It's a free app. When you first open it up and get it set up, if you open it up with your glasses on, so wearing your glasses, it will pick up on that and it will say, do you want to connect your Meta glasses? You say yes, you give it all the permissions, which is basically just, is this app, do you trust this app, and can it access your camera? So obviously you allow both of those, and you're up and running. It's really, really simple how they've been able to do this. I'll give you a quick tour of the app itself. I'm going to try not to go too in depth with it, just because well, we could be here a while, but I'll kind of talk you through the app, and then I'll give a couple of examples of where I've used this on the classes. So let's get into it.
Oh, Orion, how can I help you? Button.
So the first button you've got is how could I help you? And this will launch a voice assistant. So you can type to it, or you can select the options manually, but you can also talk to it and tell it what you're looking for or what you're after, and it will just straight away launch that feature. There is also a wake word for this as well, which I will come on to later when we get onto the glasses.
Places made more accessible button.
I don't really know much about this, but from what I understand it, places, like certain locations, can integrate Orion into their locations, kind of in the style of Good Maps, I think, where it can map out the location and it can help you navigate to certain points within the location. But it's very early days for that yet. I think there's only a couple of locations available, and certainly not anywhere in the UK at this stage.
Open the standard features menu button.
Then you've got the menu of all the features.
Your glasses are not connected.
It's just telling me there that my glasses are not connected.
Settings button.
And that's where you can get to your settings.
Settings button.
And that's all we've got on this screen. So the bit that you'll want to use the most is either the how can I help you or the standard features menu. So let's go into there and just show you what we've got available.
Your glasses. Open the standard features menu button. Open. Visual question button.
Visual question. So this is where you can basically ask it anything that you want. So its main purpose is for finding objects, but you can basically ask it anything about your surroundings or about something that you're holding. And they provide a couple of examples in here as well. So if we go double tap on this.
Back button. Visual question. Heading. Enter your search. Search field.
There's a search field there, so you can type in a question.
Voice dictation. Double tap to start voice search, then speak what you are looking for. Button. What can I do for you regarding visual question? Button.
Those two buttons, the voice dictation and what can I do for you, they seem to do the same thing.
Some examples. Notify me when there is an obstacle in my path. Is there a stain on my t-shirt? What is the expiration date of this milk?
There's a few more, but you get the picture. It's sort of the things that you can ask any AI assistant, really. So it doesn't have to be about your surroundings. It can be basically anything. What's important to bear in mind, though, is that this app is more designed for a specific task. So once you've started something, once you've asked a question and it's looking through the camera and doing its live AI thing, you can't then follow up with it. So it mentioned the t-shirt thing earlier. So if you typed in what is the colour of this t-shirt and it told you, but then you wanted to do, is there a stain on this t-shirt? You wouldn't be able to follow up with it in that sense. You'd have to come out of the visual search thing, go back into it, and then ask that question. So think of it as, rather than a conversational AI, think of it as something where you've got a specific task in mind and you just want it to focus on that. So that's probably the best way to think of it. But this one's pretty simple. You, as I said, you type in your question, it will look and give you a description of what you need, and then when you're done, you just come out of it. So that's visual question. Let's go back.
How can I help you? Button. Places. Open the standard feet. Open. Visual question. Button. Search object. Button.
Search object. And this is where you've got a list of generic objects that that Orion can find. So if we double tap on this, we've got, I'll just talk you through some of them, but there's a huge list.
What can I do for you regarding back button? Search. Enter your search. Search field.
You can search through them.
Voice dictation. Double tap to start voice. What can I do for you regarding search object? Button.
Again, seems to be a bit of a duplicate, really, but it just launches the voice assistant.
Recent search. Heading. Garbage can. Button. Dog. Button. Door. Button.
These are some ones that I've used recently.
Generic objects. 86. Heading.
It's got 86 objects in here. Let's have a flick through.
Apple. Button. Ascending staircase. Button. Backpack. Button. Banana. Button. Battery. Button. Bed. Button. Bench. Button. Bicycle. Button. Bird. Button. Boat. Button. Book. Button. Bottle. Button. Bowl. Button. Bus. Button. Bus stop. Button. Cake. Button. Car. Button.
I'd love to know a situation where you're searching for a cake, but some of these are a bit random. As you probably guessed, they're grouped alphabetically. It's a good selection, and what's interesting as well is the options there for things that are outdoors, like things like bench and bus and bus stop, which really just shows the range of things you can do with this. And it does kind of suggest that this was also designed to be used outdoors. Obviously, again, I will always have this caveat, doesn't replace your O&M skills, but it does help you out. And I have used this before, especially on the glasses, to locate a bus stop. And it really does help. It does do a really good job. So there's some of the objects that you can search for.
Places made more accessible. Open the standard feed. Open. Visual question. Button. Search object. Button. Search text. Button.
Search text. I won't go into this one, but if you're looking for a specific piece of text, like, I don't know, say you get some mail and you want to see who it's addressed to, but you want to search, you don't necessarily want everything, you just want it to tell you if there's your name on there. You could just type in your name on this and it would kind of ignore everything else and just look for your name. So it would either read out your name if you scanned it and it was there, or it would just be saying, I don't see whatever text you've entered visible. So rather than just shouting everything out, you can look for a specific piece of text.
Nearby objects, button.
Nearby objects. So rather than searching for a specific object, it will just tell you any objects that it can see around you. It would ignore any text and or other descriptions and just give you the objects. So it might say, in my case now, it might say microphone straight ahead of you, computer to the left of you, door to your right, those sorts of things.
Nearby text, button.
Nearby text, similar to the objects thing, but with text instead, so it would just shout out any nearby text that it can see.
Personal objects, button.
And personal objects. So this is where, as I mentioned earlier, if you've got a particular... the example I always go to is backpack, because say you're in the office and there's quite a few different backpacks lying around and you're looking for yours. If you just do the object search for backpack, then it could be searching, it will just see a backpack and direct you to it. But if you do personal objects, you can train it on your specific one and it will look for that specific one and hopefully guide you to it. Of course, it wouldn't be perfect, but it will know, it will have a bit more of what to keep an eye on. So that is how that works. And it doesn't have to be a backpack. You can train it on anything you want, really. So those are the standard features. If you want to use it with your glasses, there are a couple of settings that you might want to configure. So let's go into the settings and I'll quickly talk you through those.
Settings, button, back button, settings, heading.
And in this, there's a few different options, but the main place you want to look in is parameters.
Open or close voice assist, tutorials, button, parameters, button.
There are some tutorials there as well, which will help you get a bit more to grips with how to use it. But if we go into parameters.
Open or close voice assistant, button, AI glasses, heading.
So you've got the settings here for AI glasses. So what should happen is when you're wearing your glasses, it should just pick it up, as I said. But if it doesn't, then you can manually connect them here. You do have to be wearing your glasses, even if you do it manually. You have to be wearing your glasses to connect them up, but this is where you can do it.
Connect AI glasses from Meta, button. Voice commands, heading.
There's a few options for the voice assistant here.
In general, let the app listen for Orion and stop. Ellipsis. Always, button, pop-up button.
So this would basically mean that it's always listening. There are a few different options that you can configure in here. So there's always.
Selected, always, button, only if I interacted with Orion a few seconds ago, button, never, button.
And then there's never, which would basically mean that you manually have to trigger the voice assistant if you want to use it. And only if I've interacted a few seconds ago would basically mean that it would stay listening for a few seconds and then would stop listening and you'd have to manually trigger it again. And then there's another option here that you want to make sure is checked.
And when using AI glasses, let the app listen for these voice commands, ellipsis, even when the screen is locked, button, pop-up button.
So this basically means if you have these two options set, then it will basically mean that it's always listening, including when you lock your phone.
Oh, Orion's voice, heading. Use VoiceOver as assistance voice. Switch button, off. Announce usage guidelines at start of each feature. Switch button, on.
This is probably quite a useful one while you're getting started. So when it launches a feature, it will give you a brief description of how to use it. But there are the more detailed tutorials as well within this settings menu. There's quite a few options in there. As I said, parameters is more than likely where you want to be for configuring the options. When it comes to the glasses then, once they're connected up, there's a couple of different ways you can use it. You can either go into the app and select which features you're looking for, and if your glasses are on, then it will automatically use the glasses camera, and if they're not, it will use the phone's camera. You don't have to do anything there to manually switch between them. Or, and this is the way that I would recommend it for the hands-free approach, if those options for the voice assistant are selected, so always listening and including when the screen is locked, then you can just say Orion, you'll hear a little tone, and then you can ask what you're looking for. So you can say, if you want to look for a specific object, you can say like, search for a bench or search for a bus stop, or you can just ask any question to use the visual search feature, or you can say search for whatever text you're looking for, or you can just say nearby objects or nearby text. You've got all the features available to you. And as always with those AI services, you can be quite natural with the way that you speak. A couple of limitations that you might want to be aware of. You won't be able to access Hey Meta on your glasses while this is running because it's taking over the microphone. So you won't be able to do that. And you won't be able to, there's no controls via the touchpad available. So you won't be able to end the Orion call using the touchpad. Instead, you just say the word stop and you'll hear a tone and it will stop the video stream. It will still use the microphone because it will then be listening again for the Orion command for you to do something else. But you won't have any control over the app via the touchpad, and you won't be able to listen to media as well, so things like music and podcasts. And that's not Orion's fault. These are limitations of the Meta software development kit for now. They can only take advantage of the microphone and camera. They can't take advantage of things like the touchpad for added controls, but maybe that will come, who knows? But that's all in the hands of Meta at the minute. When you have finished completely using the app, you'll want to close it down from the app switcher, and that will stop it from listening, because otherwise it will always be using your phone's microphone or your glasses microphone to be listening for that Orion command, which obviously you won't want. So if you know that you're going to be using it, then just open the app and keep it open, or keep it in the app switcher at least. When you're done, just close it down from the app switcher and that will turn it off entirely. So I've done a couple of demos for a couple of examples of the way that I've been using this. Now I will say, getting audio, recording audio from the glasses is tricky, so the quality of these is not the best, unfortunately, but hopefully it at least gives you an idea of what's going on. On my work laptop, when you first boot it up, you've got to put in a BitLocker pin before you get to Windows. And on that screen, on that pin code screen, there's no screen reader because BitLocker is at the sort of BIOS level. It's before Windows. So you can't get JAWS, you can't get Narrator, anything like that. And there's nothing that anyone can do about that. But the problem can be with that is when, say you get a JAWS update or a Windows update where you've got to reboot the computer, it can be really difficult to know when that screen has come up and when it's ready for you to put in the pin. Especially with, say, a Windows update where it can restart itself several times and, you know, you lose speech at the best of times during Windows updates. So it can be kind of difficult to know when it's ready, and if you don't put the pin in for a couple of minutes, sometimes it will shut itself down, or if you get it wrong a few times, it will go to then wanting a recovery key, which is even more of a nightmare, and that screen's not read out either, so it can get a bit messy. So what I tend to do is either just sort of guess, because I know roughly how long this thing takes to reboot, or I will use Scene AI. So point Scene AI at my screen on my phone and wait until that eventually reads out the BitLocker screen. But it would be way easier if I could just sit here with the glasses on, just look at the screen and get told when it's ready. So let's see if we can do that. So I've got the glasses on, I've got the Orion app voice assistant listening. So let's see what we get. Orion, tell me when my laptop displays a BitLocker screen.
The laptop screen is currently dark and reflective, showing reflections of lights. There is no visible BitLocker screen.
Okay, so I'll now power it up.
The laptop screen is currently dark and reflecting light, so I cannot see if it's displaying a BitLocker screen. Please ensure the screen is on and clearly visible. Your laptop is currently displaying a BitLocker screen. Insert BitLocker at the top left, and below that, enter the PIN to unlock this drive. There's an input field for the PIN, and then options like press ESC for recovery options and press FATE for startup settings.
Stop. Right, I've now stopped Orion from listening, and it's told me that the PIN is there, so let's put in that PIN, and then we'll see if Windows starts up, and then we'll know for definite that it was right. Pretty sure it would have been, but may as well just test it. And there we go. There's JAWS, and we're in. So I would say that was pretty spot on. I cut down the time that it took for my laptop to boot up there, obviously, but I didn't edit anything from the Orion side. I didn't cut out any of the latency that was going on or anything like that. So what you heard there was pretty much real time. Next up, I had a bit of a classic blind problem. It was bin day and my bins had been emptied, but I wasn't too sure where they'd left them because, of course, I put it just outside my driveway, but they sometimes empty them and just dump them anywhere, as I'm sure we've all experienced. And I thought, I wonder if Orion can help me locate them, help me find them. And this one was completely unplanned. I hadn't tried this one before. I hadn't done any testing of this beforehand. I was about to try it anyway, and I thought, you know what, let's record this and we'll try it out together. So here's how that went. Orion, search for a wheelie bin.
The object wheelie bin is not directly supported by the search object feature. I can try to help you find it using a general visual search, or you can search for text on it if there is any. Alternatively, you can add it to your personal objects for future searches.
Search for wheelie bin using visual.
I don't see a wheelie bin in front of you. You might need to move the camera around to show more of the area. I don't see a wheelie bin in front of you. You might need to move the camera around to show more of your surroundings.
Okay, I'm just walking.
I don't see a wheelie bin in front of you.
Walking up the
there is a red wheelie bin directly in front of you, slightly to your left. It is standing upright on the ground.
Okay, let's move to the
there
left.
There is a red wheelie bin directly in front of you, slightly to your left. It has a closed lid and two wheels visible at its base.
Ah, here we go. Got it. Stop. Bit difficult to talk you through that one because it was interrupting me a fair bit. But basically, when it detected it, I was just sort of looking around essentially, and then once it detected it and said I can see it in front of you and slightly to your left, I just started walking in that general direction, and as you could hear, it was giving me prompts kind of indicating I was going in the right direction, and sure enough, yeah, there it is. Beautiful. So hopefully those two little demos give you an idea of how this can be used and how it works on the glasses. I've been playing around with this for the last couple of weeks. I've been really, really impressed by it. As always, with all of these things, it's not perfect. And this is, although it's publicly available, I would say this is still very much in the beta phase, just because of where we are with Meta. But I'm loving this so far. really, really liking it. And it's free as well, so, you know, give it a go. This is available in the App Store. The spelling is O-O-R-I-O-N, so Orion. You can download it from the App Store on iOS. And as I said before, if you want to connect it up to your glasses, just put your glasses on, open the app. It should detect them and ask if you want to connect. But if it doesn't, then go to settings, parameters. And one of the first things you'll come to is AI glasses, and you can connect them up that way. If you've been playing with this, then let us know how you're getting on with it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And that is us done for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us and tuning in. If you want to get in touch, if you've got anything that you want to share with us, or is there something we can help you out with, drop us an email, or you can attach a voice note as well. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. We'll be back with you, same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.